Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay in the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
This amendment to the Senate amendment prohibits state universities from using state funds to join or maintain memberships in associations that threaten to financially impact our state. Taxpayers should not be used to support associations. Taxpayer funds should not be used to support associations whose actions are detrimental to those very same taxpayers. Associations are free to make their own decisions, but as stewards of taxpayer funds, we cannot allow these funds to be used against us. That is the amendment.
This is an interesting late add on Friday to a bill that otherwise doesn't have an awful lot to do with any of this. It's a bill that's granting basically a free college course credit to members of the military is kind of the underlying bill, basically, Senate Bill 845. And yet what was added to it was, in case you didn't understand the language there, the idea was to basically say that if a Florida university participates in an organization that then threatens to financially harm the state of Florida, they cannot use public funds to pay their dues to be members in that organization. Now, Davis, you pay attention to Florida politics because you work this show.
I know.
You also pay attention to sports in general because you care deeply about sport. Not to imply you don't care deeply about politics, but you care even more deeply about sports. What organization are they talking about?
I have no idea.
They're saying that you cannot be a member of an organization that threatens to financially harm the state of Florida if you're a university and use public funds to pay your dues to that organization, say, in connection with a sporting event that might be withdrawn from the state. What organization are they talking about?
Well,
it's the NCAA.
The NCAA.
I figured.
I know. I was
I'm
like,
not trying
waiting.
To trick you.
No, I was like, is this a trick question? Because like, this sounds
question.
Like college sports, the
it
NCAA.
Is. That's exactly what this is about. This is a statement that if the NCAA wants to threaten Florida or threaten to pull out events or harm us financially, great. But we're not going to pay the dues to be part of the NCAA with public funds. Now, you would have thought, who knows? I don't know what the Democrats exactly thought was happening here, but they thought this was the end of the universe, which, by the way, it's an incredibly minor thing, quite frankly, because it doesn't say what I would have preferred, which is if you threaten to boycott Florida, we won't be members of your organization. See, that's what I would have liked to see. You know, no public funds will go to a university that is then part of an organization which is boycotting or harming Florida. That I would have favored that. That's not what this is. This says that whatever money gets used to pay membership dues to the NCAA or other organizations, you just have to do it privately rather than through public funds. But it, like I said, the end of the universe from the Democrats. Representative Guillermo Smith, who is a very outspoken advocate of LGBT issues on the Democrat side.
I'm kind of confused on how we got here. Is this amendment about trying to deter the NCAA from possibly boycotting our state because we have decided as a body to expel transgender students who are playing on team sports?
Can I answer? Yes, clearly. That's the reason here.
Actually, no. I mean, I think that...
But he says, Representative Trumbull, who is running the amendment and the bill...
Actually, no. I mean, I think that it goes back to us as duly elected members of this body. Do we feel that we should be allowing an agency or an organization, an organization to use our taxpayer dollars in a way that we don't seem fit?
I mean, he's right. It's broader than that. But clearly, that's the anticipatory nature of what they're aiming at here. Maybe they're also aiming at the major leagues or the NFL or something like that. But since it's college sports, it wouldn't be relevant to those things, right? They're clearly thinking about the NCAA here. But it's one of those situations where maybe you don't say it because on record, when there's a lawsuit challenging this amendment, then you're not on record admitting that, I suppose. I mean, it seems silly to me to avoid it. But OK, here goes.
If this has nothing to do with the NCAA's stated opposition to
this is Rep Hardy.
The bigoted legislation that was passed out of both chambers the other day.
Representative Hardy, personal attacks are not welcome. What are welcome are questions on the legislation. If you have questions on the amendment, please ask them.
Mr. Speaker.
You don't call your fellow representative bigots, in other words.
It's very difficult to ask questions about the common sense implication of this language that was passed without, frankly, being canceled.
But Representative Hardy, I'm confident that you can ask questions without personally attacking your colleagues. You're recognized.
So then the question became, well, what is this telling people that they can't do? Isn't this telling people they can't boycott us?
We're not telling anybody that they cannot boycott in this amendment. The NCAA is a great example. If the NCAA wants to boycott this state, all we're saying is that if University of Florida or FSU, then you would use privately raised dollars to continue to be a member of that organization.
So we're not saying they can't boycott us. Well, by the way, why is that important? Because a boycott might be interpreted as a speech exercise. And if the state, through its financial punishment of membership in an organization, theoretically was viewed as speech picking, then that could be a First Amendment violation, which Rep Hardy, the Democrat, brought up.
If they boycott this state, then we just will withdraw public funds from institutions or organizations that might boycott this state. How is that not discrimination based on the content of a person's speech? It's government action punishing a person or organization because of a position that they've taken.
All we're saying in this is that you can't use public funds to be a member of the organization.
How is that not the precise problem that folks who care about the First Amendment would have? You're taking away the public. That's exactly the problem.
So, first of all, it doesn't do much because it moves from public to private. Second of all, it's clearly about the threat of a boycott or a pullout of events based on the anti-transgender participation bill. And also, it is certainly a statement of content with regards to behavior. Whether a boycott qualifies as speech is its own question. Anna Eskamani, another outspoken Democrat.
Since we've talked about the NCAA as an example, do we know what universities pay each year to join the NCAA? And is that state dollars or is that private dollars they fundraise to participate?
Representative, I do not know how much it costs to be a member of the NCAA. From my understanding, most of those are state dollars that are used to be a part of that organization.
They don't know how much money is involved. They don't know for sure where the money's coming from. One of the other representatives brought up that there's a state law that apparently says that dues membership in these auxiliary organizations cannot be from state money to begin with. So this amendment might be prohibiting something which is already illegal under state law anyway. What would it mean if a university is a member of a chamber of commerce that advocates for tax cuts and therefore harms the revenue rolls of the state of Florida? Would they be disqualified from that? Trumbull says no, but I think the analysis is on that. I mean, listen, every Democrat raising questions here was right. And yet I completely support this amendment. Because just the idea that you could have state funds going to support an organization which in turn is boycotting the state is absurd and obscene. In principle, this is right. In practice, all other questions are on target.
Really, this amendment is almost a glitch bill, which I seem to be running quite a bit of this time. But let me just say that the Senate strike-all amendment restores the effective date of July 1st, 2021 to the law regarding compensation for name, image, and likeness for certain athletes.
And by the way, this bill, this was the one, I don't know if you've been following this, but Davis, I know this is near and dear to your own heart, and we've talked about this many times, the name, image, and likeness revenue that college athletes are going to be able to take for the use of, like, in a video game or in a jersey or whatever, that was set to go into effect this year in July. Because of some regulatory hurdles and trying to get the thing rolled out in a way that was amenable to the universities and also to the NCAA, the Senate had amended this bill to push it back. This is the same bill we were just talking about. It's got a lot of pieces to it that have been, you know, at the end of session, a lot of things get thrown into bills that aren't necessarily the primary reason for that bill. And they were going to push it back to next year. Well, a lot of the college athletes, like the quarterback at FSU, said, the hell you are. No.
That and all the coaches, too.
That's right. Because they had recruited on the basis of this, and you're depriving players of income coming up this summer. And so, essentially, they put back an amendment on the bill that reverted it back to this year. And that passed. It's a hard bill to track because it got voted for overwhelmingly. 114-2 in the House, 29-10 in the Senate. Even though it had, like, for example, that provision dealing with the NCAA and some other stuff. But that did all pass. So they're all going to, and I'm sure the governor is going to sign it. He can't not sign it. But that means that coming up July 1st, as was previously expected, the athletes will get paid. 623 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Mark Jacobs in the newsroom with your headlines. Mark?
More help on the way as India battles an explosive surge in coronavirus. The White House sending military planes loaded with supplies and oxygen. The country has more than a third of the world's new cases. A new travel ban into the U.S. starts tomorrow. Three people dead, 27 others injured, when a boat carrying illegal immigrants capsized, broke up on the rocks along the San Diego coast. Border Patrol spokesman Jeff Stevenson says human smugglers use poorly equipped vessels.
Hey, did you say three? I thought the number they were throwing out was four previously.
I had heard four previously as well, so okay. I'm not sure where that change came.
Okay.
And remember last week we were saying never bet against Bob Baffert? Well, never bet against him.
Never gets old, and I'm probably the most excited I've ever been in a long time because I didn't expect it. And those are the best wins.
Yeah, they sure are, especially when they're your seventh Kentucky Derby win. Medina Spirit, I knew I should have put some money down.
Yeah.
12-1, took the early lead, went on to win under jockey John Velasquez.
It was the most boring Kentucky Derby. Even though it was fairly tight at the end, It was still boring because that horse was out the whole time.
Wire to wire.
And also, somehow or other, NBC lost their graphics capability after the final turn. So you couldn't see
who was
in the lead. You know, exactly.
I think they do that on purpose.
Oh, you think so?
And actually, looking back at other races, they always do that.
On the final turn, on the stretch for home, yeah, they always take it
down. They turn it off.
They take it down. They let the guy who's the voice, they let him take over from there.
All right, fair enough. I'd never noticed before, so thanks for the correction. I'll take it. 625 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Davis Allen has traffic on the fives.
And back to the front gate of NES Pensacola. Actually, not really seeing any delays now. So early delays have since gone away, along with Gulf Beach Highway and Blue Angel Parkway. They're all flowing smoothly. Same with 9 Mile Road in Pine Forest and Mobile Highway, I-10, I-110, and Garcon Point Bridge and Avalon Boulevard, all flowing smoothly at this time. But if that changes, you want to let me know about it, 2626-111. That's my phone number. I'm Davis Allen with the traffic on the fives.
So when you're going to buy a used car, one of the key basic things you ought to get is a Carfax report. Now, I've told you before, I'll tell you again, I don't think a Carfax is the end-all, be-all of used car buying. I strongly recommend you get a used car inspection by a mechanic you trust, okay? But at the bare minimum, you ought to get a Carfax, okay? And so if you go to somebody, you know, let's say it's not Frontier, and you go to them and they want to sell you a used car, but they're not giving you a Carfax, well, first you got to kind of wonder why, okay? But even so, it's no big deal. Just call Frontier, give them the VIN number. They'll run one for you for free of charge. No problem. Now, why would Frontier help you potentially buy a used car from somebody else? Because they can. I mean, it's no skin off their back, so why not do it? Just help people. Make good decisions so that you wind up getting cars that you're happy with, or at least there are no big surprises. That's the way they look at it. We can do it. We can help you make better decisions. Maybe that works to us for better business in the future. Maybe it doesn't. Doesn't matter. We're going to do it anyway. That's the heart of service behind the way they do business. So when I say Frontier Motors has been serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years, right behind that big buffalo on Beverly Parkway, I mean it. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News on Saturday. I went by a little early to the new homeless shelter that has just opened up. Now, it's not open for occupancy for the homeless, but they did do an opening on Saturday for, I think what they're going to do is basically they're going to do like, you know, food and worship service and kind of day center kind of use in the beginning. But in any case, this is, we had Friday on the show. We had Caleb Houston, my good friend from Huts for Our Friends. He was one of the organizers of the Graffiti Bridge protest. And it's called the There Is Hope Rehabilitation Living Facility. It's on Anderson and North Davis, which is, you know, what, just south of Tahar. And it's a brick building that used to be all brown, and they've painted a lot of it bright green. You really can't miss it when you drive through that part of town. This is such a cool project. They took an old probation office, you know, a place of, you know, punishment, essentially, right? Not a place of happy, optimistic, you know, outlook, but kind of a dreary kind of place. And they redeemed it. They've redeemed it now to be a homeless shelter to help people get out of trouble and give them services and just to, including, by the way, there's going to be 50 rooms in there. Right now, they've just got like one bed in each room, but eventually it'll have up to four in the room so they can house like 200 people. 13 of those rooms are going to be for moms with kids, which is such a need. It is such a need. I mean, men are more often homeless, but women who lose their homes, especially when they kids or have to separate from an abusive, I mean, there's all kinds of issues here, right? So this is a really good thing. Here's the most amazing thing about it to me. They pulled this deal together in 2 months. They started work on this 2 months ago, and now they've got a facility that's at least really open. How long has, you know, and look, I know Grover and Lumen have been trying to get something pulled together for 2.5 years almost. Government moves at one speed. Private individuals with wealthy financiers backing it, they're anonymous, helping out. A whole different speed. That's just impressive, frankly. Very, very cool. Video's up on our Facebook page if you want to see a tour for yourself.
I'm Jennifer Kishinka with Your Money Now. The Big Apple has taken a backseat to Beijing as the world's billionaire capital. The Chinese capital has exactly one more billionaire than New York City, 100 to 99, according to Forbes' latest list. The number of billionaires worldwide increased 32% to 2,755, or 660 more than a year ago, as many cashed in on a surging stock market. Former Mayor Mike Bloomberg was once again the city's wealthiest person and the world's 20th richest, with $59 billion. 3M has lost the first lawsuit to go to trial over the safety of earplugs it sold for years to the military, with a federal jury awarding $7.1 million to three veterans and finding the company failed to warn about defects in the product. More than 230,000 service members, veterans, and others have filed claims blaming 3M earplugs for causing hearing loss. Minnesota-based 3M has stood by the safety of the earplugs, which it stopped selling in 2015. That's Your Money Now. Bring it.
What? I'm rules chair. For what purpose?
Mr. President, I move that the Senate adjourn sine die.
Does Senator Farmer want to object? Well, that objection, the Senate concurs.
Parting shot at outgoing leader of the Senate Democrats, Gary Farmer, who got ousted for Lauren Book. That's kind of a funny one. Joining us now, this is the end of session, was on Friday. Joining us now, we have Alex Andrade, our state representative for District 2. As a recap for the session, Alex, welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew. Thanks for having me on, as always.
Absolutely. Hey, I know it's not your chamber, but it seems to me like Lauren Book is a much smarter choice for the Democrats as their public image spokesperson rather than Gary Farmer, who, I mean, if the goal is to grow the party, you know, I'm not trying to offer the Democrats successful advice, but she's far more appealing as a representative than he is, in my opinion. What do you think?
Well, one, I have the utmost respect for Senator Farmer. I know him personally, and I think he's a good man who can kind of work across the aisle. But as a member of that kind of youth movement, it's always good to see younger people in positions to make decisions, because I think we come at it from a slightly different perspective, for sure. And, you know, I ran a bill with Senator Book this year, and I think she's incredible, and I'm excited to see what she gets done in that position.
Yeah, me too. I think it's healthier for the chamber, for not just the Senate, but for the entire legislature. Big stuff happened this year. The largest budget ever passed, right?
By over 10%. This is the first year that we've passed the budget over $100 billion. In large part because of that massive influx of federal cash that's been coming down through COVID-19 stimulus packages. So we have a very large budget, but you know, a lot of that is going to go towards deferred maintenance in schools, expanding different components of healthcare services we provide, especially for pregnant and expecting mothers and children. We were able to completely overhaul our early learning programs here in Florida. This was a year of incredibly significant restructuring in how our state government works. And I'm just incredibly impressed by how all of it operated this year.
And an expansion of eligibility for school vouchers, pretty significant reform consolidation of the scholarship funds, right? I mean, some pretty big changes that we've talked about over the course of the last couple of months.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, working in the education silo this year as the whip on policy was really fun to play a role in it. I mean, we completely overhauled how our workforce placement systems work in Florida, our career source organizations around the state. We completely restructured how they operate because of, some issues that we'd identified for a while. As Speaker Chris Rouse, pointed out that we have more, if the federal government has the deep state, we have the kind of commission state. There's a commission for everything that the 30-year-old organizations and boards that we really took a deep look at, and we started to overhaul to make sure that we're actually doing right by everybody who's paying taxes here in Florida.
What's the most significant? Because you mentioned several different things. You're, as the education whip, the person who's responsible for gathering the votes and making sure the education agenda passes in the House, what do you think is the one thing that stands out as the education reform slash change that happened this year that maybe people didn't hear a lot about? Or even if they did, what's the one that you look at as the, hey, pay attention, this happened this year?
Well, I would say 100%, just a refocusing on how we get people back to work or we upscale their employment. When we passed these two bills, House Bill 1505 and 1507, the Florida House, they largely went through committee and the Florida House without any debate or opposition. But this was the largest restructuring of our workforce development programs in history. And the Speaker, noticing that, this was kind of flying under the radar, but was a massively significant change, actually gave us all a blueprint of how the structure was changed so that everyone could visualize the significance of what was happening, mainly because we, were able to just get these kind of passed without much opposition this year. So I was glad that he was able to recognize the thousands of hours of staff time that was put into completely overhauling how we get people back to work and get people trained for the jobs of the future.
From the person who's going through that job leveling or changing, what changes from their perspective?
Well, it's a largely structural change. So these are federal programs that the state administers to these local boards. And there was no chief executive responsible. I mean, we had CEOs of career source programs from other parts of the state come to committee. And when we asked them, hey, how many people did you place in a job this year? They wouldn't have that data.
What?
The fact that there was no central person responsible for performance in these organizations was a critical problem. So restructuring it to where the Department of Economic Opportunity played a much more significant role. The secretary there, Dan Eagle, he was just confirmed by the Senate, making sure that our Department of Education, Department of Economic Opportunity were working hand in hand, had the same information, and everyone was responsible to make sure that people going through these programs knew what they were investing in and knew what they would get out of, participating in them was a big, big deal for us this year.
All right. Very good. And just as I know a lot of people were very passionate about this topic, and I just want to button it up for folks that SB 86 that involved the reform of Bright Futures or changes to Bright Futures, you and I've talked about this numerous times, as you predicted, passed the Senate, got no attention, died and is over at least until next year. And we have fully funded Bright Futures for this year in accordance with state law.
Yes, and I would also note that it came up through that kind of similar theme. We have students who are not being told what to expect if they go and pursue specific degrees. So right. While the intent was good, the execution was not, and it did not, it didn't make it through.
Yeah, I would say the execution really was on the other side, the response to this bill. Hey, we're talking to Alex Andrade. He's our state representative for District 2. Hang on free for just a second, Alex. Let's take a quick traffic break. Davis Allen, traffic on the fives.
And taking a look at Avalon Boulevard and Garcon Point Bridge. Avalon flowing smoothly. Garcon appears to be moving just a little slower as you're trying to go northbound. Southbound is checking in clear. And eastbound traffic in Gulfbreeze Parkway starting to build back up around the Center for Sight area on Highway 98. Also, I-10 and I-110 checking in clear. I'm Davis Allen with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, Davis. Now back to Alex Andrade. Alex, we are now into May. We are into the final month of the second deadline for which FDOT has given us for expecting the Garcon Point, or the Three Mile Bridge, Pensacola Bay Bridge, to be reopened at least to two lanes. You previously said you think they'll hit Memorial Day. They might even hit earlier, mid-month. As of today, what do you think?
I think that the two lanes on Three Mile Bridge will be open before Memorial Day. Every employee at DOT, the governor's office, they've all been very, very confident that those numbers will be hit, and that people will be back driving on that bridge very soon. And I'm looking forward to that day, probably more than anyone.
Okay. All right. Well, very good. Well, obviously, I hope that is the case. I've been hoping all along to be wrong in my June or July prediction from the beginning. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, it's kind of one of these things that's gotten a lot of attention and also very little attention at the same time, weirdly, which is the reform of the no-fault insurance law here in Florida for our car insurance. This passed through, which, as I understand it, means that the personal injury protection is going away and we're going to move to a system that which is more like other states. I'm much more familiar with the way other states do it than even the Florida system. This makes sense to me. I never liked this no-fault system. Is this or is this not going to lead to higher or lower premiums?
I think for the majority of Floridians, it's going to lead to lower premiums over time. This was a huge deal, but it got zero debate in the Florida House. I was flabbergasted by the complete lack of attention this shift was passed with. Representative Grawl, Erin Grawl, she was the one that sponsored it this year. She's been working on this since she was elected. This is her fifth legislative session. I remember her trying to work it on my transportation bill last year, and we were trying to figure out a way to get it done. This is our PIP system in Florida. It was capped at $10,000 in reimbursements that hadn't been increased since the 70s.
It's crazy.
$10,000 in the 70s was worth far more than it is today. And actually, creating a more honest, direct system was something that was important to us that will hopefully, because we're going to match up with more states around the country, we'll bring more insurance providers into the market and increase competition and hopefully over time drive down costs and increase value. So I was excited about that shift. And, I was just more stunned by the complete lack of attention it was given as it was passed through the House.
Yeah, I think you had Jeff Brandis brought it up for about 3 minutes in the Senate or 5 minutes in the Senate. I mean, honestly, there was more discussion about the cleaning of the roof of the Department of Education building in the House than there was about eliminating this longstanding, decades-old, stupid system of no-fault insurance in Florida that, fraud is an issue, coverage, adequate coverage for people. I mean, all these things are issues. So, it's interesting what things catch people's attention and what things don't catch their attention about. Very good. Alex Andrade, he is our state representative for District 2. Alex, I know it's an inconvenience to go over to Tallahassee all the time and do the service. We know you put in good work and lots of hours. I appreciate the service, and I certainly appreciate the time that you spend helping us understand what's going on during session. So thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Andrew.
Absolutely. 6:49 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. national average for a gallon of gas, $2.90. Florida average, $2.77. Los Angeles, California, don't go, $5.19. Rosenberg, it's almost European prices. Rosenberg, Texas, $2.19. So that's a Dubai, by the way, in Texas. Here locally, not Dubai the country, but Dubai, or the city. Anyway, here locally, $2.82 east at Navarre at the Walmart. West at the other Walmart, it's $2.79. $2.91 up 87. In Midway, Tiger Point area, $2.81 at the Murphy across from the Garcon Point Bridge Landing. $2.77 in Milton this morning at the Raceway. $2.77 P Ridge at the Walmart. $2.79 at your second station heading out of town over the Causeway. That's the Raceway. If you get over into Pensacola, it's $2.67 at the North Davis Raceway. $2.64 at the US 29 Walmart in front of the, or the Murphy in front of the Walmart. $2.78 coming in from the southwest side at the Navy Exchange. $2.76 at the TNC on Navy. Mark Jacobs is in the newsroom with our headlines. Mark?
Cleanup begins today in Mississippi after tornadoes tore through at least three counties last night. 19 reports of twisters. National Weather Service will have to confirm how many of them actually touched down. Senator Mitt Romney will not be censured by Utah Republicans despite getting an unfriendly reception at the state convention.
Thank you.
Thank you for booing me, 2,100 delegates.
Did he get guidance from Roger Goodell?
they narrowly ruled out censuring Romney. Of course, he voted twice to impeach former President Trump. Didn't hold back their feelings, though, when he got up to speak. And Italy's famed Leaning Tower, welcoming back visitors after being shut down during the pandemic. More than 500 tickets sold on Saturday when the 180-foot tower reopened. It was built in 1173, remains one of Italy's top tourist attractions.
Absolutely. Have you ever been there?
No.
To Italy?
No, I have not.
I have been to Italy. I have not been to Pisa. So, haven't even been to Rome. Went to other places. Want to go sometime. I would like to see the Leaning Tower just to
see
everybody's
it.
Seen it.
Yeah.
You want to see the things in real life
that you've
seen.
You can stand there and take the selfie where you're kind of holding it up,
you know, and looking all strong. Yeah. I would do that. Mark Jacobs, thanks for the update. 6:53, Davis Allen, time for a quick shot of sports.
Well, the NFL draft has finally concluded. It's a whole weekend affair, and a few locals were taken. In fact, over the weekend, we had another local taken in the fourth round to the New York Jets. Who was it?
And with the 107th pick in the 2021 NFL draft, the New York Jets select Michael Carter, running back, North Carolina.
Michael Carter, who went to Navarre High School,
mm-hmm.
was taken. Alex Leatherwood, by the way, was the other guy who was taken in the first round. So another local guy going. He went to North Carolina. But there was a little bit of a mistake there on ESPN's coverage. They showed another Michael Carter.
Oh, no.
Completely opposite. He was actually a
Many
defender.
Many Michael Carters look alike.
I guess. Well, this Michael Carter stands out because he was an All-American guy who was really electric at the University of North Carolina.
I may have missed it. What team did he go to?
He went to the New York Jets.
Thank you.
So they picked up, you know, a quarterback, a running back, a receiver, some defenders. So the Jets actually had a really good draft, and one of them was a local guy. So that's good to see here. Andrew, we talked about it last week, how you just can't bet against a Bob Baffert horse.
Mm-mm.
Well, Medina Spirit, who was a horse trained by Baffert, ended up winning, originally coming in at 30-1 odds, but then they adjusted the odds as the race was getting closer. I think it was a 13-1 odds, I believe, ended up being the close. But, you know, if I had put $10 on it, I'd be $130 richer. So, or maybe $120 the profit. But anyways, Medina Spirit won, giving Bob Baffert his seventh Kentucky Derby. That is a record. So we have some Tom
Brady
going over here.
The favorite, Essential Quality, finished out of the money. It was at 5-2 odds. And everybody, you know, it was like $8 million got bet on this horse, and you got nothing.
Got nothing.
Not nothing.
Not nothing. I was trying to go for Hot Rod Charlie, but Hot Rod Charlie was also a no-go.
My gosh, okay.
He was show. He finished third. But anyways, that's your quick shot of sports. Now moving this on over to your traffic on the fives, as we're seeing just a little bit of slower moving traffic, especially in the eastbound direction of Gulf Breeze Parkway, backed up around the Center for Sight. Once you turn northbound to go to Garcon Point Bridge, it's a little slow moving getting onto the bridge. Once you get over the hump, it checks and clear the rest of the way towards I-10. And speaking of I-10, I-10 and I-110 are flowing smoothly. I'm Davis Allen with your traffic on the fives.
Okay, so you get a call. Like, let's say you get it this morning, that there's some problem at the plant in Tuscaloosa, or there's some meeting you really need to be at in Atlanta, like, you know, this morning, like in 3 hours, you got to be there, 4 hours, you got to be there. So here's what you do. One thing you could do, you could go through the airport and wait in line. I mean, but you probably won't even get there on time, right? Here's what you do. You call Southeast Air Shuttle. Captain Eric will take you right now. I mean, if you can get to the airport, he'll spin up the plane. It takes 2 minutes to walk from your car to the plane, and you go. And he'll arrange to have a car there waiting for you at the tarmac. You get out of the plane, step into the car, and you go. And then you can get to the plant, or you can get to the meeting. And if you need to go from one place to another, I mean, no problem. And then you come back home. The whole point of Southeast Air Shuttle is you have a plane at your disposal to use how you need to do your business. Now, if that makes sense to you, and if your time is important, then that's the way you want to go. Southeast Air Shuttle, your no-line airline where you fly when you want, not when you're told. Find out more at flysoutheast.com. News Radio 93 and AM 1620. Future News. Davis and I tell you what's going to happen. Before it does, this morning, Santa Rosa County School Board is going to have their emergency meeting to figure out what to do with the mask mandate in schools. What are they going to decide?
I think they're going to go ahead and make it optional.
Yeah, they're going to make it recommended, encouraged, not required. I certainly expect that to happen. The gaming bill with the Seminoles, is that going to pass the legislature when they do their special session?
It will.
I think it will. Will it survive the dual or more legal challenges that it will face because of the weird structure of it?
I think so.
I also think so, but that's going to be a little bit more dicey. Will car insurance go down in the state of Florida because of the elimination of the no fault?
Yes.
I agree. Will property insurance be going up for at least some people because of the reforms put in for citizens?
And yes.
Yeah, I also think so. We'll be back in a minute.